The Final Edition Radio Hour is a work of satire intended for people who own books, gentrify neighborhoods, and say they like kale. Please consume responsibly, the satire, that is. Hi, I'm Tony Hendra.
And I'm Jeff Chrysler.
And this is the Final Edition Radio Hour.
Tony, this has been a fantastic week for satirists.
It has indeed, Jeff. The Final Edition Radio Hour's Super PAC, which poured millions into the campaigns of the likes of Mitch McConnell, Greg Abbott, Scott Walker, Rick Scott, and dozens of other Republicans, so we'd stay in business, had a triumphant election night.
All across the board, the Final Edition backed coke whores, con men, bag men, congenital liars, misogynists, bigots, hypocrites, gay haters, religious lunatics, and good old-fashioned lynch mob-level racists who make up the GOP and our bread and butter are in charge for at least two more years.
And that's an age in the satire game.
Wait, this is a game?
Great, so.
Well, are we winning?
I think so.
Good.
So we just want to thank those millions upon millions of deluded, close-minded, self-defeating, terminally gullible Americans who make up the party of age, rage, and race from the bottom of our hearts.
This is, without a doubt, going to be the single most know-nothing nativist right-wing Congress since the mid-19th century.
Except, of course, that even the most right-wing mid-19th century Congresses knew how to read, write, and do simple sums.
Well, our show is going to take a rest from all these barn-sized targets this week, Tony. We focus mostly on Lena Dunham, Tarzan job openings, and crashed commercial spacecraft, which I guess is sort of a metaphor for our political system.
Who, Lena Dunham?
Yeah, she's like a crashed commercial spacecraft.
So relax, forget politics, pour yourself the beverage of your choice, and jump into the Final Edition
Radio Hour.
Death, the final frontier. Hello, I'm Richard Branson for Virgin Titanic. I'd like to reassure all future space passengers there will be no further crashes. And when I say none, I mean there'll be some. But we're doing everything in our power to make your crash as hip, fun, and expensive as possible. Each of our deadly fireballs will be equipped with state-of-the-art music channels playing the very hottest tunes, gross pun intended. When you plummet from orbit, you can be sure to do so with a wealthy A-list celebrity. Our first flight has both Ashton Kutcher and Stephen Hawking. You'll hear Ashton say, "Hey, Stephen, where'd the wings go?" And Stephen say, "I joke about your demise, because although I look like a hippie, I'm a tragic, mythical Greek figure, Pricarus, who charges other rich pricks $250,000 to fly too close to the sun. To avert our next PR catastrophe, I've got new qualified space-type people working for me. Like a guy who can do Yoda."
"Virgin mega bastard you are."
"At Virgin, we believe rocket crashing, I mean rocket travel, isn't rocket science. If you're rich and don't care what happens to you, fly Virgin Titanic. Hopefully you won't burn or fry."
"Burn or burn not. There is no fry."
"Virgin Titanic, void where prohibited by the law of gravity."
My fellow Americans, I am Rod Crenshaw, State Secretary of the Secret Government, with a reminder to vote in the upcoming secret government elections. You may have already voted recently on state and federal offices, but don't forget that you also have to vote on issues pertaining to us, the government that actually runs things. So, here are a few items on the ballot that you should be aware of. First of all, this is Faisal Banfield.
"Greetings, everyone."
He's running for president of the secret government, and just to get people caught up, Faisal, who are you running against?
"No one."
"Absolutely no one. So, Faisal is going to get elected, and then you'll never hear his name again."
"I'm leaving now."
"Yes, sir." Next, we have ballot measures through your local secret governments. First of all, Proposition 97. Do you want Filipino food available in more neighborhoods? We're going to let you decide on that. Either way, it's fine with us. Second, Proposition 102. Should we encourage solar power? I don't want to influence you on this very important question, but you're going to vote no. And that's all today from your secret government. Remember our motto, we don't exist.
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York
Island. Hi, I'm Bob Lonergan.
And I'm Brent Hightower. We're from the Consolidated Candy Corn Council.
And now that Halloween is over, we at the CCCC want to point out that nothing stops you from enjoying candy corn all year round.
For 365 days a year, we proudly show up at 5 a.m. to make new batches of candy corn. Or, as the Indians called it, candy maize.
And it doesn't matter when you buy it, because you can't tell if candy corn is stale or not.
You can liven up a lunch bucket and even a Christmas party with a little candy corn.
Ever tried adding candy corn to trail mix? Well, me neither. But there's technically no reason why you shouldn't be able to do that.
Plus, it creates jobs, especially for the candy corn farmers.
All kidding aside, it provides jobs at our candy corn factory in Deerkill, Montana. Brutal, tedious, deadening jobs.
Plus, it helps the people who make our ingredients. High fructose corn syrup, guar gum, yellow dye number 5, yellow dye number 6, and of course, the legally allowable amount of metal shavings.
And hey, you should really enjoy candy corn while you can. Candies don't always last forever, you know. I think we all remember what happened to the chocolate-covered nigger toes.
So, as you head into the holiday season and eventually the new year, we at the... We at the CCCC want you to keep candy corn in your life.
By the way, we also brought along Roger Fentonson Mordorkin, Phil, from the Peeps Advisory Board. Roger, you want to add anything?
Eat more Peeps!
Thanks, Roger.
We made them blue!
Well, that's great. So until next time, here's our mascot, Colonel Corny Cornhole. Corny, what have you got to say to the kids out there?
I said, my kidneys hurt!
Thanks, Corny.
I can't feel my feet!
The Final Edition Radio Hour will be right back.
Welcome back to the Final Edition Radio Hour.
Job opening an exciting startup.
Dynamic company seeks type A workaholics interested in adopting our passion as their passion and embracing a concept for which there is literally no consumer demand.
Our ideal candidate is mentally ill.
Unable to function outside a work environment.
Miserable at home.
Angry at those closest to them.
Happy to be called upon day or night because they have nothing and no one.
Must be able to follow contradictory instructions.
Must not be able to follow contradictory instructions.
This is such a good opportunity. We should not even be advertising this as a job because it's so cool.
And because it does not actually pay anything.
Unless the business model works out.
If the business model works out, the job has the long-term potential to pay $55,000 to $79,000 a year.
But whether or not the business model works,
and whether or not we pay you,
one thing stays the same:
the amount of work you do.
So if you want to get involved in a really cool job that is not a real job, please provide a detailed writing sample, a lengthy job history, a sad and desperate cover letter, and all your sensitive financial information.
Candidates should be unfamiliar with U.S. labor laws.
One of us is in a cult!
Hello, I'm the completely irrelevant Piers Morgan. My guest is the completely useless United States Senate.
Hey, come on now, I haven't even shut down yet.
You are totally controlled by Republicans, are you not?
I have a Republican majority, but I'm controlled by the same things as always. Big oil, big pharma, the Koch brothers, dark money, hush money, funny money, two tens for a 20, and the NRA.
What changes do you have planned for the rest of the Obama administration?
For the rest of the whose administration?
President Obama.
Is that the black guy?
He's the president. Will you work with him?
On his impeachment, yes.
On what grounds would you impeach him?
I'll tell you why we're not gonna impeach him. It's not because he's a black African-American black who just happens to be black, African-American black, and black.
So you're going to impeach him because he's black?
The black guy?
Yes, the black guy. The one you hate for reasons of racism.
Piers, hating a black guy just because he's black doesn't make me a racist.
But that's the very definition of racism.
I don't know definitions, Piers. I'm half of Congress, but I'm also a well-funded parody.
How can a government institution be a parody?
Same way the Tea Party is a parody of a political party, and Fox News is a parody of a news channel.
So, what's the GOP? The grand old parody?
Can I use that? They'll love that at our next meeting to undermine the black guy.
Obama!
Oh, who? Don't know the name, Piers.
So now you're going to deny Obama's very existence?
The right denies everything, Piers. Climate change, evolution, the gun part of gunshots.
That makes you professional charlatans.
It makes us professional wrestlers, Piers. Everybody loves angry, stupid bad guys who talk trash. That's why everyone loves us. And all you smart libtards bore everyone to death.
I shudder to think who you'll nominate for president.
Oh, we can't elect a parody, Pierce. Folks like extreme morons just fine in the primaries. But in the election, well, they want a non-insane real person.
So why don't you pick one?
What? And go against everything we stand for? We'd probably have to pick a black guy, or a Hispanic, or worst of all, a white woman.
My guess has been the hopelessly out of touch U.S. Senate. I'm afraid we've run out of time.
You've run out of time? I'm making time run backward. Next stop, 1860.
This is a message from the U.S. Public Health Service. As you know, a disease has reached the United States and will probably kill you. It will kill your family, your unborn grandchildren, and many of your ancestors who are already dead. You're all going to die from Legionnaire's disease. This mass killer became famous after an outbreak following an American Legion convention in Philadelphia in 1976. And since then, it has killed everybody. You are dead. So am I. Here is a message from Gerald Ford, who was president during the Legionnaires outbreak.
I am also dead.
Americans have also died from the West Nile virus and swine flu. But despite being dead, the public is warned to avoid contact with the public. Remember that all of these diseases can be contracted through a handshake, a hug, or a frank exchange of ideas. This message is giving you SARS.
And now the New York Times Book Review chats with Tarzan. What books are currently on your nightstand?
Ape Man not have nightstand. Keep books under rock. Me read lots of social anthropology and environmental studies. Also, any book that discusses how to fight lions with knife. Right now, Tarzan reading Jared Diamond's Guns, Germs, and Steel. Me on page 3.
How long have you been reading it?
5 years. Tarzan's slow reader.
What book most influenced your development as an heroic adventurer and fighter for justice in the jungle?
Me brought up by apes. They no read. So not start till age 27. After go to England, become Lord Greystoke. Then Tarzan read bio of Lord Byron. Decide want to be just like him. Have adventures, see far off lands. Do sex thing with pale, swoony ladies and gentlemen. Except Tarzan no write poetry. Instead fight lions with knife.
Do you read any fiction?
Sure. Tarzan especially enjoy novels that rip away thin veneer of civilization, expose savagery beneath. Luna flies real good. And Bram Stoker's Dracula, Heart of Darkness, has compelling plot, evocative symbolism. But Conrad get jungle foliage all wrong. Tarzan borrow 50 Shades of Grey from Jane, but it make Tarzan blush.
What's the last book that made you laugh?
Oh, Julius Caesar by William Shakespeare. Everyone talk funny. Wear too much clothes. Look silly. All you need is loincloth. You wear toga, knife get caught in folds when you try to whip it out for killing lion.
The last book that made you cry.
Moby Dick. That very sad book. If only Tarzan be there. Me wrestle evil whale. Kill him with knife. Save Captain Ahab.
Any books that did not live up to your expectations?
War and Peace. Me enjoy epic scale and historical realism. But cheetah eat book before me can finish. Tarzan disappointed. Tolstoy masterpiece should have stronger binding, be able to withstand rigors of tropical climate, molars of chimp. This foreign book make Tarzan angry. Tarzan beat chest in frustration. Scream real loud.
But surely you can't blame Tolstoy for that.
Hey, Tarzan is simple creature with primitive code of morality. Me believe people either good or evil. You come into jungle, try to make off with precious carved idol of native tribe. Tarzan kill you. Eat your heart, beat chest, scream real loud.
Have you ever considered writing a book yourself?
Tarzan once approached by American publisher to write memoirs. Ape Man came up with great title. Me, Tarzan, you reader. But then Tarzan have big fight with editor. Editor evil. Him want cut chapter on vine swinging technique. Him say put in sex with apes. No! Tarzan no write sex with apes. Me role model for youth. Tarzan bashing brains of editor. Leave rotting corpse for jackals. Triumphant scream echo throughout entire jungle. This happened years ago. But natives still giving Tarzan high fives.
Yeah, editors suck.
Hey, folks. We're the commercial space tourism industry, here to put your minds at rest after the recent accidents by space travel companies Virgin Galactic and Orbital Sciences.
Commercial space tourism isn't part of some free-spending government program like that one that put a man on the moon without making the billions of dollars in product placement deals that were available.
Really? Tang? That's the best they could do? Try That's One Small Step for a Man, a Giant Leap in My Nike Mundus Space Trainers.
No, space tourism is the product of private enterprise. The people who brought you asbestos insulation, thalidomide, and lawn darts.
These are people who know that there are going to be lives lost in the quest for knowledge, innovation, and fun backyard games.
And it's important to remember that these accidents caused only one fatality. Fewer people die from commercial space tourism accidents than are stabbed to death by O.J. Simpson.
Commercial space travel is still safer than taunting a bear, going home with Phil Spector, or being black in Ferguson, Missouri. Yet nobody is going to give up on those things, except for the Phil Spector thing.
Commercial space tourism wasn't created by the kind of egghead scientists you see on those Science Channel shows with Morgan Freeman. Those types are too reliant on math and physics to have an entrepreneurial vision.
Space tourism was created by four bored billionaires. Richard Branson made a fortune selling CDs and books. Hello? If he can do that, he could do anything.
And the fact that space tourism is unaffordable to anyone but billionaires assures you that we'll have all the safety issues totally worked out before we start carrying actual paying clients.
That's going to take trial and error. So right now, we'd like to announce our new space tourism test flights for people with modest means. If you're a budget-conscious space traveler, welcome to the new MySpace.
Talk about budget-conscious. That name only cost us $100. MySpace is experimental space travel for poor people.
It's kind of like the original space program when they used monkeys and dogs. But with this plan, no animals will be endangered. And people who live in poverty will get to travel to space whenever it works right. Yes, the odds are against them, but you know how poor people love playing the lottery.
So if you're a billionaire, just relax. We'll let you know when space travel is safe. And if you're not a billionaire, there's no need to wait. Check out MySpace.
Not the one for losers, the one for real losers. One way or another, you'll get to see the heavens.
Hi, I'm Barry Lank, West Coast producer of The Final Edition.
And I'm Steve Rosenfield, formerly a writer for The Daily Show, currently a guy making up stuff for The Final Edition right now.
We are a couple of heterosexual guys, here to tell you what we think about gay male sex. Steve, what do we think about gay male sex?
We don't.
Because we're not gay. If you're straight, you don't think about gay sex.
Because you're not gay.
And you don't care one way or the other about it. If you are a guy and you are really bothered by gay sex and you really want to do something about it, what does that mean, Steve?
You're gay.
That's right.
You're a gay.
Why else would you care?
Because you're trying hard not to think about it.
Which makes you gay.
Unlike us.
Steve, what do we think about?
Not being gay.
Mostly we think about our failures and people who let us down.
Who are straight and gay.
And we think about alcohol we like.
Right now, we're drinking Trappist Ale.
God, this is good.
It really is.
So if you are really concerned about homosexuality, you are gay.
And we don't care.
As we said.
Don't even want to hear about it.
With luck, we'll be back with more of the Final Edition Radio Hour.
Look out! There's more Final Edition Radio Hour!
Okay, so this is Tony Hendra, and I'm interviewing the wonderful John Fugelsang.
Thank you, Tony. Very honored to be here. Thank you.
You and I have spoken a lot about being a Catholic comedian, and I'm very interested in this because I think this is one of the most interesting of the unique things about you.
Well, it's a pleasure because you're someone who has written so eloquently and sensibly about the faith with full command of intellect and sentiment, which is something that I reach for. I consider myself Catholic the way that a lot of... it's my asexual orientation. I don't know if the Pope would consider me Catholic, and I'm sure most Catholics wouldn't consider me Catholic, but I do consider myself Catholic the way non-practicing Jews consider themselves culturally Jewish. And given the amount of emotional time I've given the Holy Roman Empire in my life, I feel qualified to talk about it all I want.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with that. I can't say that I agree with almost anything that the Church has been doing for a long time. But nonetheless, it's more than a cultural thing, though. It seems to me it's also a way of looking at the world which goes a little deeper than the average non-religious person does, because you have kind of grappled at some point in your life as a Catholic with problems of good and evil and guilt and so forth.
Yeah.
And
well, I don't kiss the ring. You know, I stopped kissing the ring a long time ago.
Yeah, me too. One of the things that always bothered me a little bit secretly, however vicious and, you know, nasty we got at the Lampoon, was whether I was actually hurting someone.
Yeah.
That charity as a virtue seems to be the first victim of a really committed comedian.
Charity as a virtue. I mean, well, I don't know. I'm actually a big fan of charity, and I think that if I had to defend the Catholic Church on anything, that would be the first area that would spring to mind. I think no one raises greater awareness of global poverty. I think when Pope Benedict, for all of his many flaws, came out and said that the nations of Earth have a responsibility to provide health care for their poorest citizens, regardless of their ability to pay, I thought, well, gee, that's actually Christian, not Christian.
Right.
And so, you know, I'll give him big knocks on the false piety. And, you know, I think Jesus laid it out pretty well in Matthew 6:5 of don't trust anybody praying in public. They just want to be seen. Which, you know, when you think about it, it's actually rather telling. Once I was in my teens when I really decoded that for myself. I was spending a lot of time down south and watching these televangelists just praying, mm-hmm. praying on TV with nothing between you and them but an 800 number for you to send your money, praying. And I thought, my God, you know, like, you talk about it and like, well, would you defecate on television? No. Well, why not? Well, it's personal. Well, what's more personal than talking to this God you believe in so deeply?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I developed a healthy distrust for that. And look, the Catholic Church has dug its own hole. I mean, married priests is the conservative point of view. You know, you get rid of all these sexual hang-ups, which don't come from Jesus. They come from parts of the Old Testament, and they come from Paul. Get that shit out of the way and allow married priests, allow women priests, get over the celibacy law, which was fully put into place in 1139 AD by Pope Innocent II, purely to keep priests from leaving wealth to children. So the church was greedy.
Right.
Not out of a sex hang-up, it was just money. You get rid of all of this, and you'll see these cretins interfering with altar boys disappear.
Right.
In the meantime, you know, I had Bill Donahue on my TV show last year, and I got him to admit that the church had a moral responsibility to pick up a phone and call a cop. And that's the great sin of the last two popes. In many ways, this current pope is sort of like when they elected former NBA superstar David Bing mayor of Detroit after Kwame left. It was like, well, here's the really nice guy that's going to be a beat change for us. You know, here's the positive face that will hopefully make you forget how corrupt and evil the last guy was.
Yeah. The thing about Francis, though, is that I have a nasty lurking suspicion that he's not actually going to move the rock very far.
See, I disagree. I think without even changing a single policy, he's already moved the rock pretty far.
Yes, but
doctrinally,
I mean,
he won't have a great legacy. But culturally,
yes. Well, culturally, I mean, he did very firmly say the door is closed on.
Yep.
On
he sucks on women.
Celibacy.
Sucks on celibacy. Sucks on women. None of those things come from Jesus. You know, when you read the Bible, as I know you have, you see that wherever Jesus went, there were these three women that were always there,
and 12 guys.
12 guys, 3 women. But I mean, Mary and Martha, the sisters of Lazarus, and Mary Magdalene, who at no point in the Bible is described as a prostitute. And they're the first people Jesus appears to after he comes back from the dead. A thinking person would say, it appears that Jesus had 15 apostles. But the men who wrote the Bible said, nah, 12 apostles, 3 groupies. And you're right. For all of the good things about Francis, and I like him, and I want him to have a good food taster. I don't want him to fly in any small aircraft.
Right.
You know, this is a guy who wouldn't let the Virgin Mary say Mass because of the ancient policy of no knob, no job.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
You know, that's an embarrassment.
Yeah.
It's a good thing the nuns are there to redeem the entire church because God knows the penises aren't doing
it. Yeah, I was one of the most interesting guests that you had on, what was it called, Viewpoint?
Viewpoint.
Viewpoint. It was just Simone Campbell. Right, who is a great heroine of mine, I must say. She's especially the way she stood up to this visitation scandal that Benedict began.
That whole time was Benedict beating up on nuns. I mean,
yes,
they actually
absolutely
told nuns not to do yoga. They told nuns not to do Reiki healing. I mean, they told nuns to stop focusing on the shit Jesus talked about, like poverty and helping the sick, which Matthew 25 is just him laying out the whole deal.
Indeed.
And told them to focus more on the shit Jesus never mentioned, like abortion and gay people and birth control.
Right, right. Get back in the bedroom, in fact.
It's hard not to look on that as on a cultural level as just males controlling females' bodies, sexualities,
absolutely,
and using guilt and shame to control behavior.
We actually have a character on the final edition called Sister Mary Che. And Sister Mary Che is one of the little sisters of Noam Chomsky, which have their headquarters in Wellesley, and obviously. But one of her favorite things is the church is divided. She's this lovely little old lady who's very sort of sharp and has 2 doctorates and stuff, you know, unlike Timothy Dolan. And one of her favorite things to say is that the church is divided into 2 classes of people, the hierarchy, Catholics with penises, and the lowerarchy, the ones who don't have penises.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
And, the nuns are, to me, the nuns are where the church is at. I mean, it's
I grew up around a lot of nuns. You know, I didn't go to a Catholic school, so I never have had the privilege of being beaten by one. But but my mother was a nun, and my mother went into the convent right out of high school. She grew up in the mountains of Virginia, and that was her way out of poverty. That was her way out of the life that she was in. She was the granddaughter of a prohibition bootlegger, and you know, her way out was the convent, put her through nursing school, sent her to New York, then sent her to Africa. Eventually, she came back and married my dad, who had been a Franciscan brother. He had grown up around a lot of gang activity in Flatbush, and, you know, he had family members get in trouble, and he joined the brothers, and they put him... Actually, a priest offered to put him through St. Francis Prep, and then he became a brother, and that got him his master's, and he used religion as a way to get out of poverty.
Right.
You know, de Tocqueville talked about how religion was the origin of democracy because before religion throughout Europe, if you were born poor, you stayed poor your whole life. And religion was the first time ever culturally that a poor-born person could somehow rise in status and eminence to the level of nobleman. So, you know, back in 1831, Tocqueville was giving religion credit for beginning upward mobility. You know, so I grew up with and then both my parents quit. They made a vow to God that I would never happen, and they both quit. So I grew up with a really divided idea of religion because due to religion, I'm not supposed to be here, but due to religion, I got to be here. So I accept all the contradiction, and I call out all the hypocrisy, but I like to shine a light on the positive aspects of it because there are quite a few.
Yes.
You just don't see them on TV.
Right, right.
You see douchebags screaming at women outside clinics, and that passes for faith.
Right. I actually love that log line you have for your play. Was it a brother married a sister? And
oh, yes.
And later the child tweeted about it.
Yeah, NPR wrote that, but yes.
Right. Oh, they did.
Yeah,
okay.
A brother married a sister. That was rather lurid sounding. But it
especially
did,
for NPR.
Yes, it did yield a lot of clicks. I'm glad I could bring that. Yeah, I got the incest jokes and I got the black jokes. You know, my father's a brother, my mother's a sister, and I'm the whitest man in this room. But, you know, growing up, it was very normal to me. I was 6 years old, and my mom showed me my grandmother down south was showing me family photos from before I was born, and I noticed in a lot of them my mom was dressed very differently. And, you know, I just came to really think that, well, there's normal people who go to Mass all the time and observe all the holy days. And then there's everyone else, the majority of people.
Right, right.
And it took me a long time to decolonize my brain and get away from, you know, from growing up in the cult I was raised in.
Yeah. That's a wonderful story, I must say.
Well, it's got all the good and the bad, you know?
Yeah.
And one of the good things I got from Christianity and from Jesus was that, you know, you take the good and the bad in people, and I try to take the good and the bad in societies and religions, and you know, I don't want to be a fundamentalist just full of condemnation and fire and brimstone. I want to love people. I want to love the people that piss me off. And so that's something I carry from it. But at the same time, I think organized religion is an atheism factory in America.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the other things that I've noticed that you do too, but it was the sort of thing I had on some of my contemporaries in the comedy world, which is that you actually do know the Bible. I mean, you know the New Testament.
Well,
so it's that's the only way you can take on these religious lunatics.
Well, that was my thing. All my friends are atheists, and I respect all that. I believe in atheists. Some of the best Christians I know are atheists, and some of the most godless heathens I know are Christians. So you know, we all know that. But like, the only points of view we get in the media are atheism and douchebags screaming at women outside clinics. Sometimes that's how it feels. And when I was growing up, I had a lot of problems with religion, but I knew amazing people. My mom was a head nurse at a convent when I was a kid, a convent for her former order, mostly retired nuns. And I knew nuns who were like working with drug addicts and homeless runaways. And I knew amazing Southern conservative Christian people who were so charitable and kind. And I never saw them on TV. I saw Jerry Falwell.
Yeah.
I got to debate him on Bill Maher. In my late 20s, which was a big thrill. And,
oh, really? I didn't know
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was fantastic. And I got to call him Pro Some Life to his face because big death penalty fan, that one.
Yeah.
And I pointed out that Jesus never mentioned abortion. He was kind of specific about not murdering sinners. You know, so I kind of like – I was turned off to religion by what I saw on TV, but I was turned on to faith by the kindness I saw in my Christian, Muslim, Jewish, loved ones and friends and people I came into contact with. So I'm a big believer and respecter in personal faith and a big distruster of unauthorized fan clubs of God.
In other words, organized religion.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I must say the older I get, the less interested I am in any kind of religion that organizes itself. But I think that's less important than the fact that when you look out at the world, all religions are basically, all organized religions at least, are basically a conspiracy by men against women. And they're all oriented towards male superiority. And
But not all religious people are that.
No, exactly. But certainly that's the rule of Islam and the rule of.
But you can make the same arguments about academia, about business, about sports.
Sure.
You know, culturally, our whole society is the.
But religion's supposed to be different.
And I'd like to see religion lead the way. I mean, religion. You know, if it hadn't been for religion. We probably wouldn't have had so many people able to lie to themselves that slavery was okay for so many years. But if it hadn't been for religion, I think abolition would have come much, much later. If it hadn't been for religion, I think the civil rights advances would have come, you know, possibly decades later.
Right.
It's having the guy in the collar and that moral authority for all the shaky ground it's built on, having that on one's side for a progressive moral cause. I mean, we're watching the dominoes fall now with LGBT rights. There's nothing you can use in the Bible to say that being gay is wrong. Nothing. You're going to quote Leviticus to me? You're going to say that you follow the laws of Leviticus? Then you have to murder gay people with stones when you see them. You know, homophobes, I don't know if you noticed, the gay guys have been working out. They're ready for you. So take your best shot. I mean, no one follows Leviticus. Jesus never said a thing about gay people. Paul in Romans is not talking about gay people. Timothy in Corinthians is not talking about consensual gay people. Sodom and Gomorrah is a story about public gang rape of angels, not about Elton John getting to marry who he wants and talk about it. So, you know, once I broke through that wall of bullshit and realized that, you know, the Bible can be used as a means of spiritual uplift as much as it could be used as a means of cultural condemnation. And just as the Bible was used, you know, the sons of Ham to justify slavery, the Bible was used to uplift slaves and give them hope and inspiration. And so, you know, I the Bible's like, it's like Occupy Wall Street or the Tea Party or the Constitution. You know, you'll look into it and you'll see what you want to see.
Yes, indeed. As a Catholic who actually believed in the Bible sufficiently to study it,
I was very devoted.
You then are armed against in the very way that these people do not want you to be.
Absolutely, because most of them are just ignorant hypocrite pigs. Right. I mean, most of them are just horrible bastard people, and you know they really are. And it's like everyone
scum, dirt,
once you've decided that you're on the side of God, you can't be wrong.
Right.
You know, and so if you've decided that you speak for God, and that you and God are lined up on all the issues, that means anyone disagreeing with you speaks for Satan. And you are not going to sit down with Satan and negotiate school curriculum or what the terms of marriage are in your society.
Right.
Because that's just evil. Any kind of compromise is evil. This is the notion of, you know, American exceptionalism or manifest destiny, which are fancy bullshit ways of saying, whatever, I do what I want. And I, who was it? Was it that said, I'm not going to remember, it wasn't Susan B. Anthony. Who was it who said that, you know, they find religion suspicious because God so often hates the same people you do. And so, yeah, you know, and that's the kind of thing that all the religions warn us about. But I realize that you can't fight those people by saying you're wrong, because they want that. They want to run back to their little cliques, and they want to say those evil heathens out there threw their feces at me, but I'm here amongst you good people, and we are a strong community. And, you know, that kind of pride, well, that's how brown shirts get sold in some societies.
Yes.
And so, you know, for me, it's much more, I'd much rather sit there with one of these fundamentalists and actually say, let's assume every part of your book is literally true. Now tell me why my government, based on liberty and freedom, needs to discriminate against same-sex couples. And using your holy book, let's assume there's no separation of church and state.
Right.
Let's say we should have a government based on Christian values. Well, that means taking care of the poor, taking care of the sick, being kind to people in prison, and not starting any kind of violence. And doing that first. It also means death penalty.
Right.
It means not strict adherence to Old Testament laws, because the Pharisees went after Jesus because his followers were working on the Sabbath.
Absolutely.
And he shot right back at them and said, Leviticus says you have to stone disobedient kids. Do you guys do that? Jesus called the Pharisees themselves out on their hypocritical, pious bullshit. Yes. The same book that today's modern Pharisees are using to put gays in a corner. So, you know, Jesus was anti-conservative religion from the very beginning. I just did an event with Reza Aslan, and, you know, he's getting a lot of mileage out of showing people what a politically powerful revolutionary force Jesus was. He didn't get executed by the state because he didn't rock the boat enough. You know, the guy was a radical, and he'd be rejected by religion today.
That was part one of the Final Edition Radio Hour's interview with John Fugelsang. Part two, next week. We'll be back with more of the Final Edition Radio Hour after this.
And now, some more of the Final Edition Radio Hour.
City's open way too late. Got nothing in its brains. That's what people say. That's what people say. I've got too many games, but they can't afford to pay. At least that's what people say. That's what people say. It's like we're cruising, tourists and millionaires moving into condos where they used to make music. while you've been getting down dirty in your three jobs for the dirty cheats of the world, we sold off New York City to these sick creeps. My ex-man is a trusted fairy yen who's like, oh my god, living in Brooklyn. To the fellow over there with the MacBook Air, ain't no place for writers in this new city. Cause the city's gonna change, 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 change. Cause the portraits of police, plain, 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 plain. Baby, I'm just gonna sell, 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 sell. I sell it all, I sell it all. Politicians gonna play, plain, 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 plain. And the artists got the game, 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 game. Baby, I'm just gonna sell, 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 sell. I sell it all, I sell it all. Sell it all, I sell it all. I sell it all, I sell it all.
Today, we're lucky enough to have our favorite little old left lib nun live on the air. Sister Mary Che, how are you today?
A little guilty. We had key lime pie for supper last night. Yum! When the other ladies had gone back to bed, I snuck down to the fridge and had a big extra helping.
Thou shalt not sneak extra helping, sister.
I know. Don't tell Mother Superior. She jumps the gun.
Wow. I can't believe I'm old enough to get that reference.
Not to worry about getting long in the tooth, dear. I always say life doesn't begin at conception. Life begins at 50.
Sister Mary Che, our listeners have been wondering what you and the nuns of your order...
The Little Sisters of Noam Chomsky.
Think of the new Pope Francis I.
He's a big improvement over the last fella.
Benedict XVI?
Benji the Rottweiler of God, we girls of the Veil used to call him. We call this fella Papa Frankie. One thing we like, Papa Frankie doesn't swan around in those gold and red satin slippers like Benji did. We could feed a homeless shelter for a month on what he paid for those babies. Papa Frankie says he wants a church that is poor and for the poor. Yay!
He's also said, quote, it's not necessary for the church to be talking all the time about abortion and birth control and gay marriage.
Yes, dear, but that's like saying we're going to stop talking all the time about daddy's sex addiction problem. But we're not going to do anything about the milk crate of naughty videos he has under his bed.
You mean when Pope Francis talks about not talking about these things, he's all talk?
No, I mean Papa Frankie isn't about to tell the big men of the church to stop spending so much time in people's bedrooms, telling people when they can have sex and how they can have sex and who with. I know my Bible a little bit, and I can't think of a single time when Jesus shows up in someone's bedroom or tells them a thing about sex.
Wait, isn't the Pope infallible in all matters of morals?
Infallible in schmallible. Who declared the Pope infallible? A Pope! All these rules about sex they make up. Funny thing is, they didn't seem to make any about priests having sex with boys.
That was a terrible scandal, true. But the church has cleaned up its act, agreed to new safeguards, and moved on.
Yes, the big men lost. They tried a cover-up, and it didn't work, so they had to pay millions and millions of those lovely dollars they'd been saving for fancy footwear and first-class tickets to Rome. Now the poor things feel emasculated. And what do red-blooded men of God do when they want their holy cojones back? They take it out on their women. Us! Benji was very fond of doing that.
Yeah, I recall that. Didn't he reprimand American nuns?
Actually, it was the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, which is sort of our union. We all supported Obamacare, which Benji didn't like one bit. So he sicked his bureaucrats on us, the Vatican Office for the Suppression of Almost Everything. Oh, they came down hard on us. They put us over their knees and gave us a good theological spanking. After that, we had to have a bishop present at all meetings to make sure we weren't saying naughty, heretical things, and we had to start talking more about abortion and birth control and gay marriage.
Just the things Pope Frankie now says you shouldn't be talking about so much.
Exactly.
But Papa Frankie's reversed all that, right?
Nope. He says the spanking was just what we needed. We still have to have a bishop chaperone, and we have to spend more time in people's bedrooms. Instead of wasting our time feeding the hungry and caring for the sick and the poor. Like that homeless guy. What's his name? Oh, yes. Jesus.
Perhaps Papa Frankie is all talk, and nothing's going to change.
Let's put it this way, dear. So long as there's a Holy Father of Holy Mother Church, we're talking the P word, patriarchy. The big men need little women to make them feel big. That means all Catholic women, not just us nuns.
Sister Mary Che, it sounds like we need some women priests.
Better not say so in public, dear. There was this lovely Australian priest who supported ordaining women. He was the first person Papa Frankie excommunicated. You want priests without penises? Boom! In the dumpster.
Sister Mary Che, I wish you were my priest.
Oh, it's never gonna happen with Papa Frankie, dear. He's a nice man, and he doesn't care about money and lives humbly, but he's still a man. Like Mother Superior says, 50% of the human race causes 90% of its misery, and until we have a pope who's humble enough to admit that, well, we're going to have to be around to clean up all the mess they make.
Thank you, Sister Mary Che of the Little Sisters of Noam Chomsky. And say a little prayer for me.
I will, dear, the moment I wake up.
For the final edition radio hour, Will Durst here with a few choice words on the grotesque drubbing suffered by the Democrats in the midterms this year, which to call monumental is like referring to the Pacific Ocean as moist. The scene was so grisly, most Democrats were forced to avert their eyes. Surprised the FCC didn't find the stations that aired election returns, thereby exposing young viewers to such extreme, monstrous violence. It was like a front row seat at the World Championship Seal Clubbing Tournament. If you ever wanted to see numbers bleed, this was the night for you. Kept waiting for a referee to jump onto the CNN set, ring a bell, and raise Karl Rove's hand in the air. Way back in 2010, President Obama described his midterm losses as a shellacking. This was more of an epic trouncing with faint overtures of putrescence. Afterwards, the soon-to-be Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, tried to tamp down his partisanship by saying he wants to work with the president. Yeah, the same way a five-year-old with a magnifying glass wants to work with ants, like a gorilla wants to work with bananas. A 10-ton boulder falling off a cliff wants to work with windshields. What Obama should do now is promise the Republicans twice the amount of cooperation he received from them after the 2012 election. Because everybody knows 2 times 0 is still zero. But all indications are, despite the increasing odds, the president's still ready and willing to fight for his agenda, as soon as he figures out what it is. Staffers say he doesn't know the meaning of the word quit. Apparently, he's not overly familiar with the words consensus strategy or leadership either. For the Final Edition Radio Hour, I'm Will Durst.
The Final Edition Radio Hour is performed at one time or another by Bruce Cherry, Jen Dodd, Jim Earle, Rob Gordon, Tony Hindra, Jeff Hendrick, Kevin Janis, Jeff Chrysler, Barry Link, John Marshall, Ebby Parker, Rachel Rausch, Steve Rosenfield, David Eskridge, Andrew Danish, Leslie Shapira, Anne Tuchel, and Darby Worley. The show is written at one time or another by Bruce Cherry, Jen Dodd, Jim Earle, Rob Gordon, Tony Hendra, Jeff Hendrick, Jeff Chrysler, David Eskridge, Barry Link, John Marshall, Ebby Parker, Leslie Shapira, Jeremy Rayburn, and Steve Rosenfield. The Final Edition is produced and directed by Tony Hendra and Jeff Chrysler. West Coast production by Barry Lank. Audio editing and production by Greg Russ and Andrew Hammond. The Final Edition Radio Hour is the property of The Final Edition, LLC. Copyright 2014.